Marine Corps again.
Well, we could. I mean, we could definitely stir up enough trouble, I suppose. And rap, you know, rap's great because we could take rap music from 10 years ago, as long as it's still being put on the shelves and being sold. I guess that would count. You
or
know,
it's being played on the radio.
It doesn't even have to if it's in the store. I mean, we could go back to the real nasty stuff before they cared so much about rims and bitches, when it was all about kill Whitey and kill the cops. You know, like when I was a teenager, you know, the gangster rappers, NWA and all that. Oh, we could hand it to them. If they're still selling them at that Sam Goody and at the store.
Yep.
And it's Jews that's selling them, so great.
Hey, about that.
Take the Jews to court. I'm all about it. You know,
as I said, you know you're never going to win, but if you realize that you're not going to win and you're only going to use it as a propaganda opportunity, go for it.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a propaganda thing. It's what's fair. It's what's right. Propaganda is when you're pushing bullshit. And what we're talking about here, hold on, Rob. What we're talking about here is fair. You know,
yeah, but your version of the word propaganda is what Hollywood's taught you. That's not what propaganda's about at all. Propaganda.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Rob is right on that one. Propaganda.
Hey, I've
something
here in my house that if I tried to send them to you guys, customs would seize them. I've got an SS manual on Freemasonry. Right now, that technically that's National Socialist propaganda. You read it from A to Z, boom, pure fact. I've got some small booklets by Goebbels, and they're actually his speeches typed into a pamphlet. Boom, pure fact from beginning to end, and yet it's called propaganda. Propaganda is nothing more than political speech to get ideology from the speaker to the listener. That's all it is. If it's not true, the speaker's a fucking idiot because he can get called off.
Propaganda's not a bad thing.
Oh, it's necessary.
So, and yeah, as far as the lawsuit goes, what it does is it promotes, what happens is the news media gets involved, and then once the news media gets involved, then what happens is they link it to VNN and say, these people are filing a class action lawsuit. So then you get millions of hits on the website. So it is propaganda, but at the same time, you're right, Mark, it is, doing it is the right thing to do, but the public perceives, hey, yeah, these guys are doing the right thing to do. So, you know, they go to the website and see, you know, what else is going on as well. They start listening to the radio program. So, I mean, we use it, I mean, primarily as the right thing to do, but inadvertently also, it becomes propaganda.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so we need to, everybody needs to keep pumping them out, man. In the meantime, we got, what, maybe a couple years at best before hate crimes is the next step. I can't imagine that they can, you know, anything we do now up until that point is safe. So make videos, you know, keep broadcasting. Thanks for coming on, guys. I mean, I don't see why, Rob. Why don't you take a Thursday night slot or the Wednesday night slot on VNN?
For me?
Yeah. And you could do endless, you know, hours about economics, religion. You know, you seem to have a huge database of knowledge in your brain. Everybody, we should all be doing broadcasting. We should all be making videos. You know, that's my main reason for starting broadcasting was to just galvanize people and to get on and repeat myself over and over how everybody needs to make videos. Everybody needs to get active. And you know, I know from what I understand, you know, Todd, you've done a lot of that stuff, right? Like you were one of the people that distributed a lot of the white patriot leaders.
Right. The Aryan Alternative I distributed a lot of.
Right.
And I try to bring this point up with people as much as I can that, you know, it's like people on the fora and some of the people on VNN will be like, well, it's not effective. Well, the whole thing is that the reason we're doing it is not because I didn't get 12,000 tabloids rolled up in my living room to throw them out to people's property for them to read. And it's like people hear me say that and like, what are you talking about? Why did you do it? Well, the whole reason that you do it is when you throw, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 tabloids out in the morning, between 4 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock in the morning, what happens is a bunch of those people are going to call the news media. The news media goes out there and said, we found this newspaper, the Aryan Alternative, and then someone goes to Google and they type in the Aryan Alternative, and you get a million hits on your website. So the whole point of...
That's propaganda.
Of passing out the tabloid, just you don't want people to read it. You want it to cause a huge
controversy.
A controversy, and you want the news media to go out there and pay attention to it. So I have to say, though, there were a couple times when I did throw out like 4,000 or 5,000 of them, and the news media ignored it. And the news media ignored it. They knew that because I had gone on BNN and I said, look, the whole purpose of this newspaper is not to get people to read it. The whole purpose is to bring people to the website so they'll see the videos, they'll listen to the radio shows, and they'll see the dialogue between the posters that are on there, and hopefully they'll bookmark the forum, and they keep coming back to it over and over again. So it's, you know, you pass it out in these neighborhoods, and, you know, who cares if they read it or not? It gets the news media to freak out and say, oh, the Nazis are here passing out hate literature. Good.
That's excellent tactics. That's right. Like when I was a sales guy and I was doing sales training, they told us about this guy in Detroit. He actually wrote a book and he's got the Guinness Book of Records title at one stage for the greatest salesman in the world. And he used to go to anything, any event, baseball matches, fucking fairs, anything, and all he'd do was throw his business cards everywhere in the hope that people would pick them up. He was so successful, he had to book an appointment to buy a Chevy from him, like 3 weeks ahead. And that's what you're doing. You're using the newspaper as a conduit to get them to the net site like a business card. That's good tactics.
And, you know, that's a lot of our videos, we do that. We use that same tactic, you know.
Indeed.
There might be a message behind them, but the real purpose is just to brand, you know, right. BNN Forum on the bottom and have people see something outrageous for 30 seconds and go, you know, what the fuck, I'll go check it out.
Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely.
The
so once you start...
The argument that we're getting into on the forum really pisses me off because we get one side saying, if you're not contributing to the newspaper, you're a fucking idiot. And the other side saying, let's do the videos instead. And everyone's missing the point. If we go into war today and we're sending an army into the field, do we send all artillery, all tanks? No, we send a little bit of the army, infantry, artillery, all arms. Everybody works together.
Rob, I want you to realize something, though. There was an interesting metamorphosis that happened on the forum, and the metamorphosis was where Rounder was calling everybody a Kaikalite and a do-nothing, contribute-nothing piece of shit. But what happened was, is as soon as he went on to YouTube, I don't even know how long it took him, probably a couple of years to finally find YouTube, then he started seeing, like, Chain produced a video on his computer, and it had 90,000 views. Then the cogs started to turn in Rounder's head, and it was like, wow, this is a pretty good idea. And basically I was like, well, no shit, Sherlock. What do you think these guys are doing it? So we can't talk shit to the people like, you know, Dietrich and the people that are producing the radio shows. These people don't have time to contribute and to pass out tabloids, but there are people who do. So you get everybody to work hand in hand. I'm going to pass out the tabloids in this neighborhood. It's going to piss the Jews off. They're going to report it, which is going to drive people to the website so they can see the video. We don't want them to read the fucking tabloid. We want them to see the video because the video is more effective than a tabloid.
Oh.
Spot line.
But see, I wasn't going to mention any names, but see, what I'm getting at is every tactic that we use, every avenue is great. I mean, is it, oh, well, we can only fire arrows today, we can't fire bullets, and there's no grenades. Every weapon counts, man. If you're going to have a paper and a radio show and downloads and YouTube videos and a forum, brilliant. What else can we do as well?
I fully agree.
Let everybody contribute where they can. If someone's excellent at doing videos like Chain, you don't want him out passing fucking newspapers out. If someone's got something that they're doing and they're good at it, do it.
Yeah, utilize it. Yeah, absolutely. And you can't...
Everything
you
together...
You can't chastise people either. It's like, you know, and I try to impress this whole thing on people, is that Rounder, all he is a glorified cheerleader. He's great at what he does, but he's living in this world that's 20 years old. And he thinks that you can convert people by marching in the streets. And marching in the streets is good, because what it does is it forces the news media to pay attention to our issues as opposed to their issues. So it's good to have people march in the streets. It's good to have people pass out tabloids. Anything is good to force the news media to talk about us so that people will go to our websites and see our media. But it's not all in marching down the street. It's not all in passing out tabloids. You can't cause a revolution by doing these things these days. You've got to utilize the Internet. And you have to think as well is that you look at somebody like Bill O'Reilly. 3-4 years ago, he had a listenership of about 5 million people a night. Now his listenership is barely 2 million people. What happened to those 3 million people? Well, they went to the Internet, and that's where it's at. People are on the Internet. They're watching YouTube. They're watching Google Video. They're paying attention to different news sources that, you know, talk about the issues that are really affecting them. So we bring people to the website by any means necessary, and if it means making news media having a big story about tabloids being pressed out or you know, a rally that happened and as a result there was a bunch of niggers rioting. We want the niggers to riot because then the news media pays attention to it and they say, well, it's all because of these white supremacists, and who are they? They're over here at VNN Forum. Great.
Yeah.
Brings people to the forum. Basically, you know, we force the news media and the Jews to hang themselves. We give them the rope, say, look, hang yourself. And they have to. They have no choice. Because
because they can't help themselves, like I said before.
Well, and the best part, when niggers riot, they always burn their own shops. Fucking stupid.
Oh, those videos of the Toledo riot when the ambulance is coming in to help them, and the niggers are throwing bricks at the ambulance to get them out. Beautiful. White people need to see that. So who caused that?
What we should think of is this. Let's say that history has happened differently than it really has. And let's just say that America today is under the British and there was no revolution, but George Washington and Benjamin Franklin and all of those guys were around now planning a revolution. Would they sit there and they say, no, we're only going to use newspapers, we're not going to use YouTube, we're not going to do a radio show, we're not going to have a forum? Those guys were fucking geniuses for their... In that age, they were geniuses.
Well, not only that,
everything's legal. There's not, when you're at war, everything's legal. Use every tactic, every fucking weapon you can get your hands on. We're in a war for the survival of the white race on the planet. Anybody that
you guys got to realize that Rounder does not call the shots on that forum. He's a glorified cheerleader, and that's it. So when he gets on the forum and he calls people names, and they take it personally, and they're like, oh, man, VNN Forum sucks. It's like, look, people got, and I told this to the people over at the fora, Rounder does not control VNN. Nobody does. Alex there isn't even there a tenth of the time. So basically, you know, it's open to anyone who wants to take advantage of it. So if you have an idea, and you want to bring it to the table, and you think your idea is revolutionary, and it's going to cause a stir of a bunch of whites, well, then so be it, because look what Rounder did by just going on the forum, being a big cheerleader. He got all these people to send him a bunch of freaking money because of that tabloid. I mean, he got, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars because of that whole tabloid thing. And then people got pissed off about the whole thing, and we're not contributing anymore. So now what we've got to do is impress upon people, look, we need a tabloid.
I'm taking the tabloid over.
Right, you're taking it as far as the clerk.
Well, as far as the layout and the publishing.
Okay, well, great. Yeah.
Everything.
I'm likely to do a column in it.
Okay, great. I mean, we need the tabloid, but we need to understand is, like, we don't need the tabloid because of what Rounder thinks. We don't need the tabloid to make Rounder the head chief. The tabloid isn't there to promote Rounder.
It's a
tool. I know a lot of people are upset with Rounder because Rounder comes on there and says, if you don't support the tabloid, you're a Kaikalite, do nothing, contribute nothing. But people have to realize that he has no say-so. So basically, if we want to come on the forum and say, oh, we're going to do the tabloid because of this reason, we're going to put our stories in it, if you don't like him, you know, great, that whatever, but we're going to do it anyway. Okay, so he doesn't have the ultimate say-so in this. So that's what people have to realize, is that the tabloid is there for a reason. It's the reason is to scare the Jews into reporting on our story to drive people to our website so they can see our videos. That's it.
Right.
If we give him the benefit of the doubt, he could be doing a bit of reverse psychology on people as well. He could be playing the old reverse psychology. Oh, you guys are all fucking assholes. You don't contribute. Do something.
No, he's
and people get back up, so they will. Maybe he's doing that. I don't know, and I don't care. What my point is, we're in a war here. They want to liquidate our whole race. There's no rules. Whatever weapon
right.
you
we have to use, whatever. We have to utilize everything, yeah.
Right, and but what it boils down to after that is how do we get what we need to do is, we know that we need to use all these avenues. The next question is, how do we organize ourselves into this? How do we get teams that are specific towards making videos? How do we get teams that only worry about broadcasting? How do we make a team that only worries about doing the publications? We need to do essentially what the Jews do, which is, like I always say, to put a period at the end of another Jew's sentence. You know, there's a Jew to do every to back up every other Jew's work, and that's why they're so effective, because they use teamwork. I just finished writing a monologue about this, what we're talking about. I've been wanting to have this exact conversation since the show started weeks ago, and this is exactly right. We need to explore all these avenues, we need to use all these avenues, and we need to have it fucking organized.
A subsection of the forum, like, say, for example, I hate to use Scamfront as an example, but over there, they have their sustaining members area, and if you don't pay, you can't see it. Maybe we should have an area on VNN, and it's not for people to pay, but it's for people who are involved in the media, and only, well,
right.
In fact, there you go. Scamfront have got a radio section where only radio people can get in. Maybe we have a
section
there. We get in, and that's where we organize.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I think from here on out, BNN should just be used as a hub to link to other media. I don't think BNN should be, because BNN, it attracts a lot of attention, and it's susceptible to getting shut down. And the more popular we get, if we put all of our eggs in one basket, which is BNN, basically what's going to happen is if it gets shut down for a couple of weeks, then so do the videos and everything else. So we'll eventually have, and it's being talked about right now, surreptitiously, I guess, is that we'll eventually have our own place where we can put our videos as opposed to YouTube, Google, or LiveLeak. We put our own videos there. It doesn't get shut down, but we use VNN as a propaganda arm where people go. They see the links to the other site where the videos are, and then they watch the links. Now, as far as organizing all that, planning it, the saying, if you build it, they will come. What we need to build, or what we need to make, as far as video goes, is content. We need content.
Right.
We need news stories. So what we do is we pay attention to what's going on locally. And it's like, you guys are out there in L.A. I'm over here in Orlando, Florida. I watch what's going on in the local scene. I got my own video camera. I go out there with a guy, and I interview people. Okay, what happened here? What did you see? And they're going to tell me. They're going to tell me and the mainstream press the same thing. The difference is the mainstream press is going to censor everything that the person says except what the mainstream press wants the people on the watch their news want to see. So what we do is, instead of censoring it, we show them what really happened. So, okay, this is what the mainstream press is showing you. This is what we're showing you. The guy said it was a girl, white girl that got raped by a black guy. He broke into the house. He knew her at college, blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, you got all these stories of non-white violent crime, and we just flood our own site with all these videos, on-site videos, where we're talking to, this is another thing I brought up to both Mark and Chain, is that what the news media does is they'll bring on good-looking people. And you ever catch yourself flipping through the channels, and it's like, when you look at a reporter, it's like, if she's that fat girl, you don't want to look at a fat girl telling you what the news are. You don't want to see a nigger telling you what the news is. You flip the channels and you got some fucking nice looking white girl telling you what the news are. It's subliminal eye candy. So what we need to do is we need to interview people who are really good looking, sharp, have a great vocabulary, and we throw these videos onto our website, and these people are saying, yeah, it was a black guy, it was a Spanish guy, it was one of the Latin teams, it was this, it was that, and it's like people are starting to. Because what happens subconsciously is when good-looking people say things, people who are not good-looking will sit there and nod their heads in agreement. And that's what we can do. We can do the same things that the Jews do, because they get all these paid goyim to say things for them, and the idiot ugly goyim sit there and nod their heads. We can do the same exact thing. And it's not a problem finding people that are racially conscious to say the things on the news that we want them to say. And even so, when we interview people, we can edit out things that, just like the Jews do, we want our people to hear certain things. What did this person say? The neighbor saw this. It was a black guy. You know, and the news media doesn't want the populace to know it was a black guy because, you know, they don't want white people to think that black people really aren't the lovely, cuddly things that they are. So we're trying to impress upon people that black people and non-white people are violent as shit. And we can do that by way of our own media. So.
Well, Todd, I think you're right. And I think most whites understand that blacks are blacks. And that's, they just need a punch in the face. So, and I think that's what you're talking about, is really punching people in the face.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's getting video out there that's hard-hitting. And here's another thing, is that when we put our own video on our site and it draws enough people to the site, then what happens is the Jews are forced to backpedal. They're forced to pay attention to the issues or at least rebuttal the issues that we're presenting as opposed to fake issues like Anna Nicole Smith, the fucking girl in Aruba, and all these other bullshit stories they throw out there to cover up the real news. Here's a news story that's... Go ahead.
It's a bread and circuses deal. Oh, shit.
Right.
We've got to distract them. Quick.
Right, exactly. We force them to make up lies to cover up the lies that they've already told. So we're trying to uncover the truth, and they keep making up lies to cover the truth up again, and it makes them look stupid. So we can make them look stupid by just showing everybody the truth. So here's something interesting that happened recently that we could do a video on locally, is that presidential candidate Ron Paul, he recently they had the Republican debates, okay, and they basically what they did is they fudged the results. They didn't, when they put the results on both Yahoo and these other mainstream press websites, they didn't include Ron Paul. Now, why didn't they include Ron Paul? Well, some of the things about, now I'm not going to say that Ron Paul is a white nationalist. I'm not saying that at all. But one thing I do want to say is that Ron Paul, in interviews, countless interviews on YouTube, has said that the United States needs to get out of the Federal Reserve and the American Union. So if he, you know, this is the same reason why Kennedy was killed, is because Kennedy basically said, we're going to get back on the gold standard and pull out of the Federal Reserve. Well, if that happens, then the Jews lose a lot of money. They can't inflate the economy and make it worthless. So basically what Ron Paul is saying is that we need to abolish the Federal Reserve and reform our money system. So that's the last thing the Jews want, because if you do that, the Jews don't control the banks. So what happens is that he won the debates, because he's anti-war, and he's anti-banker, he's anti-United Nations, he's anti-Federal Reserve. So they portray the debates and say, well, these are the Republican candidates. You got Mitt Romney, fucking Kane, and all these other faggots who are pro-war, but, you know, this guy won the debates by a landslide, but they didn't put that on the news. It's not like they lied about it, it's just that they didn't report it.
Actually, Todd, what's really interesting is that ABC News got busted deleting posts like in a comment section where people were actually talking or saying good things about Ron Paul.
Right. Same with MySpace, same with Yahoo, and same with MySpace. MySpace is deleting bulletins based upon if you put like Ron Paul in the bulletin, in either the body or the title of the bulletin, it doesn't even get posted. And another thing is that, I'm not saying that Alex Jones is on our side at all. I mean, but he is a problem for the New World Order and for the Jews, simply because he keeps bringing up the point that 9/11 was an inside job. Well, he's been promoting Ron Paul quite a bit, and every time that he tries to post a bulletin about it, what happens is once he posts it, when you reply to it and you copy the code and then you want to reply to it, you can't do it. You hit the reply button to get the code, and the browser starts to run for a second and says, sorry, there was an internal error, check back again. So, I mean, that's a deliberate attempt to get people to not be able to spread the word that Ron Paul won those debates. And he won the debates because he's anti-war, And most people are anti-war right now. They know this war was fake. They know the information that brought it about was fake. But you got people that on the Republican side, Sam Brownback, you got Rudy Giuliani, which is pro-war, Mike Huckabee, Duncan Hunter, John McCain, and Mitt Romney, they're all pro-war. They come out, and the only thing they say is that they don't like the way the war is being fought. Same with Kerry.
Yeah,
he didn't say that he was against the war. He just said they've made some grave mistakes with this war. Whereas Ron Paul was like, look, we need to pull these troops out and put them on the Mexican border. He's saying what people want to hear, so his ratings are escalating, but they're not showing the rest of the people. Because, like, you know how the public is, that it's like monkey see, monkey do. If everybody thinks that people are agreeing with what Ron Paul says and he's winning in the polls, they're going to go on YouTube or on his website and see what this guy has to say. And if there's just a few things that they agree with, they'll change their mind and say, well, maybe I should vote for Ron Paul. So,
But Todd, what the fucking Zionists and Necons are already fucking doing is they're calling him not a separatist, but an isolationist.
Isolationist.
Yeah, they're using that terminology. Where he's going back to
before World War II. That's the same shit they pulled before World War I and World War II.
Yep.
Oh, you guys are isolationists, as if that's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, we don't need to police. He understands that, and I know you guys understand this, but I mean, we don't need to be the police of the fucking planet.
George Washington.
That's not our job.
George Washington advised against foreign entanglement in his farewell address, didn't he?
Yes,
oh,
he did,
yeah.
Actually.
Yep.
So Tony. Yeah.
Who? Our first war that we went into as the United States was the Spanish-American War. Is that correct?
I don't know.
I think it is.
First foreign engagement.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
It wasn't the War of 1812, or is that the Spanish-American War?
Well, if you're talking about abroad, like a foreign engagement, it was the Spanish-American War. Our first war was absolutely, as a country, was the War of 1812, after the Revolution.
I don't think that Spanish-American War would be your first foreign war. I would have thought it would have been when you
Mexico?
Were fighting against... No. What about, think about this, the Marines hymn.
Right. That really wasn't a war. They were just wiping out pirates.
But they landed Marines on the coast and they were at war with the actual government there because they were supporting the Barbary pirates.
Right. But I don't think it was actually a declaration of war. I believe it was not. It was just an engagement.
That was a war against the bankers. That was a war against the bankers.
If you're shooting bang sticks at the enemy and they're shooting bang sticks back, I don't give a fuck whether it's an engagement, a war, a conflict, a party. You're going to get killed today? It ain't good shit.
Oh, I believe I'm in agreement with you.
We agree with you, but when we say officially, what we're basically saying is that Congress has to actually, there has to be an official declaration of war, whereas the Barbary pirates was not. It wasn't really.
Okay.
It was just
there hasn't been an official declaration since World War II, assuming that Congress declared, assuming that Congress actually declared, and I think they did.
Let's think about this. We've been at war with drugs in South America for decades now, and we supply Colombia and this and that. And we actually send troops down there to shoot at the fucking people doing the drugs. It's not an official war, but yet we shoot at them to create problems or.
Well,
you know,
could it? I mean, probably shooting at them because they're interfering with the CIA's money making operations.
Absolutely.
I mean, if Israel is the biggest manufacturer of ecstasy, then you know there's something going on down south, South America.
Oh, the hypocrisy from Israel producing ecstasy, you know, with all the fucking slave trade and killing kids and this and that. That's actually kind of funny.
You know what's quite amusing is people, when I discuss the CIA and drugs and all that sort of thing, people go, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. So all I do is I say to them, look, do you think governments haven't smuggled drugs before? And they go, no. So easy. go to Google, type in Opium Wars and Sassoon, S-A-S-S-O-O-N. You'll find the British government were fucking sending opium from Afghanistan to China. And the Boxer Rebellion was to get the British out because they were flooding the Chinese population with drugs, man.
Yeah, the British we already know because of Oliver North's testimony that the United States was involved in smuggling drugs, so it's not, that's a given.
Oh.
And how did that fucking faggot become like a war hero? That
amazing.
Well,
I'll tell you what. Let me tell you what. I mean, all joking aside, Oliver North is a badass. I read his fucking book, and he was in Vietnam. He conducted over 75 successful ambushes on the Viet Cong. And every one of them, I mean, he was like, he's like, you know, a really high decorated war hero because he didn't lose as many men as the rest of them did, and his kill rate was better than the rest of them. So this guy, I mean, he was a Vietnam, I mean, I'm not saying the Vietnam War was great, but as far as like, you know, a battlefield soldier and a planner and a person who plans ambushes and stuff like that, he is a fucking badass.
Well, aside from being a badass, the guy was a motherfucker, man. The whole Iran-Contra event? Come on, let's please.
Go ahead, I'm just providing some background music.
Funny you mentioned war heroes, because when I was in the army, I knew this guy was a major in the infantry. And, you know, he's only a short guy. He's probably like, you know, 5'5", 5'6", something like that. And I was reading a book on the Special Air Service Regiment in Vietnam one day, and I found this person mentioned as a sergeant in Vietnam, and he'd won the military medal, and it had the same name, Laurie Fraser. And I thought, how many Laurie Frasers could there be in the Special Air Service Regiment in Vietnam? I didn't even know this guy was SAS qualified. Usually you'll know because they're wearing SAS wings on their sleeve, and this guy didn't. So I bailed him up one day and I said, were you a sergeant in Special Air Service Regiment in Vietnam? And he goes, yeah. And I said, and you won the military medal? He goes, yeah. I couldn't believe it. And I read the story, like, shit, this guy, a Special Air Service Regiment operates in teams of four. And they were sent out to do a recon to find either a Viet Cong or NVA camp. I can't remember which one it was. And he got separated from his group.
Not good.
And he was the one with the map. No, well, especially when you're all by yourself out in the boondocks. He was the one with the map and the radio. So he thought, shit,
well,
I'll
not,
have to
not
complete
so bad.
The mission. But so he's all by himself, and he completed the mission. He went to the map reference, mapped out the entire base, like this camp that the Vietnamese had, and then he called down the US Air Force airstrikes and they flattened the whole thing by himself in the middle of the nowhere. And he extracted back to Nui Dat and didn't even get a scratch on him. That's why he won the military medal. And I thought, shit. And this guy, to look at him, he's one of the most bloody unthreatening guys you'll ever see. If you saw him in civilian clothes, you'd probably take him for being a shopkeeper.
I tell you what, I've read a lot of stories about soldiers behind enemy lines in Vietnam, and if you're behind enemy lines either by yourself or just with a few other people, and you're able to survive in the Vietnam jungle, you're a fucking badass, because it's rough out there. You know, it's fucking hot as shit, and it's constantly raining, and there's leeches everywhere. It's disgusting. And,
don't worry about the leech.
Who's making that noise?
I'm not.
Not me. What's that, cracking oysters? No kidding.
Busted.
Okay.
No. No, but I'm just saying is that if, you know, like, I've read stories, you know, like you got people like Carlos Hathcock, where he talked about his, you know, his stories about sniping enemies behind enemy lines. And it takes a lot to be out there. So if you're one of those, I mean, I don't have any respect for the Vietnam War. I mean, it was a bullshit war. But the people who were behind enemy lines and the people who were fighting it, they didn't know that at the time. It took them being in the war and fighting the war to know it was a bullshit war.
Well, you know, funny story about Vietnam. 9 Squadron Royal Australian Air Force came back from Vietnam with more Hueys than they went with. You know why? Because they when all of our forces were evacuating Vietnam, the US Air Force and the US Army were just dumping Hueys. And some of the guys in 9 Squadron just rolled up and said, oh, we'll swap your cart and a beer for that helicopter. And then when we had 2 aircraft carriers at the time, and HMAS Sydney came back from Vietnam, absolutely packed. They had all of the hangars absolutely packed, and the entire flight deck was just packed with stuff that we'd stolen and bought off the United States. And they went out there with 1 squadron's worth of Hueys and come back with like 2 or 3. And we couldn't get any more stuff onto our ships to get it back.
Well, you know, the whole Oliver North thing, too, you got to keep in mind, at first, the Jew media was kind of against him, but once they realized that he was just going to spill the beans, and being that he's kind of a good-looking guy and he was a badass, the Jewish media loved him. So they kind of made him who he was, too, as far as, you know, in the public eye. He worked out well for the Jews, I think. You know, the whole affair was over with, and he spilled the beans, and it was kind of like Clinton finally admitting that he got his blowjob. No cared afterwards.
I'm going to post a link in the chat. It's a book about the times around Oliver North. It's written by a Jew guy called Ari Ben Menashe, and it's on the periphery of the Iran-Contra stuff. This guy was actually a special agent within the Prime Minister of Israel's office, and he was like a go-between between various parties buying and selling arms. And this guy bought 800,000 Katyusha rockets from North Korea and shipped them to Iran through Fremantle. And the state government here got paid off $2.5 million to do it. And they also ended up buying off something like 100 or 150 C-130 Hercs from Vietnam, which were left over U.S. planes, stripping them for parts and refurbing whatever they could, and they sold those to Iran as well. But this guy was framed on federal charges in New York by the state prosecutor, who just happened to be Rudy Giuliani at the time, and they banged him up to shut his mouth. And you read the book, Prophets of War, and you'll freak out at some of the stuff that this guy's publicizing.
But did you say Katyusha rockets?
I did.
Are those the anti-Semitic rockets that the bad guys are shooting at the Israelis?
Unless the Jews are selling them to the Iranians, then they're pro rockets.
But yeah, that reminds me.
When I read that, it freaked me out, because 800,000 rockets sitting in Fremantle Harbor, if they had gone off, they would have been something like 10, 15 miles from an oil refinery, and they would have detonated that. And the idiots that planned the area have got 2 chemical factories right next to that refinery, and they would have taken that out. 2 miles across the water is our naval base. They would have taken the entire fucking metro area out if those rockets had gone off, and they allowed them to sit in the harbor because it was Israel doing it.
That's
and
right.
this book is an eye-opener. I've read it a couple of times, and you really got to see it to believe it, exactly what's going on. And, you know, the Jews will sell their own enemies weapons just to get them to fight each other and make money. We know that, but this guy actually did it. So and there are mentions in the book about Oliver North and stuff as well, and it was happening at the same time.
Let's take a step back, Rob. I mean, let's take a step back. What is actually...
Well, you're standing on a cliff.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Love you, too.
But get a haircut first, then, Nugget.
I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. Now that I'm jobless and like to...
Hey, Tony.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
What's that?
You know, you said, what was that clicking noise before? It was him thinking about getting a fucking haircut.
Okay.
Yeah. Fucking A. Let's think about this for a second. What does Israel offer in terms of as a country? All it does is that the Jews that create or steal companies in the U.S., they take them over to, like, Jugal. J- just did this recently. Take them to Israel. There's nothing that is produced in that country. Nothing.
Hey, what do they produce as a country? What do they actually do?
They fucking
a lot of misery.
They murder people and they create disruption and disharmony in the Middle East. So
hey,
what do we do? Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, is that they create disharmony in the Middle East. What does disharmony in the Middle East do? It raises gas prices, number one, and it brings us to, like, fucking sail our boats and submarines and everything that we have over there to create democracy with countries that don't want democracy, that have never had democracy, don't understand democracy. They want to have women under fucking veils, men talk, everybody else shut the fuck up, and I don't have an issue with that, trust me. But all it does is create disharmony and propagates war. That's what the country of Israel is there for. It creates fucking non-stop war.
Remember I mentioned my friend before who was a Jewish author? He told me once that if you wanted to know the truth of Israel, the creation of a nation, you need to look up a company called Palestine Potash Incorporated. Now, I've never been able to track anything down on the internet, but, you know, we've got some really, really good people on VNN who can source anything. If someone can find out information on that, Palestine Potash, P-O-T-A-S-H, and he linked it to a survey that was done in, like, 1915 or 1916 by a British Army survey officer, and I've seen the results of the survey, and this survey was never published, but this survey said that, you know, under the soil there in Palestine, as it was, or it was actually called Transjordania or something similar to that, and he mentioned all of the minerals that were in the area, and it was phenomenal. And my friend Lewis was saying that Palestine Potash was a company owned by the Rothschilds, and the Israeli government has basically always been a front for this company. But as I say, I've never been able to track anything down that's even remotely connected to it. So if anyone listening has got the skills to find that stuff, that's something that, you know, could be quite interesting.
Well, it says here, a company that extracted potash from the Dead Sea, the Palestine Potash Company, was founded in 1929. The plant was established in Kalia, blah, 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 on the southern shore of the Dead Sea. The product of the Saddam plant was transported by boat to the northern plant. From there, it was sent by truck to Jerusalem. During the War of Independence, the potash plant at the north of the Dead Sea was destroyed, and the southern plant was shut down. In 1952, a new company, the Dead Sea Works, with the concession of produce potash, was established by the government. In 1953, a road was built from Beersheba to Sodom, and after it was opened to traffic, a new plant was built in Sodom, where work was then resumed. That's all it says. So it's government-owned. Obviously, I mean, potash is obviously used to make explosives, as we all know. And what did your friend say? Did he get specific about it?
No, he didn't. That was the problem. He never really said, oh, it's this, it's that. I don't know whether he had detailed information or if he just had a lead.
Gotcha.
I don't know, but it's a case of that's interesting, but that isn't what he was telling me to look for.
Well,
and I think it may have been set up in 1929, but you know, from what he was saying, it predated It predated the Balfour Declaration, so I don't know.
Well, the founder was Moses Novomeski. So he was a Serbian guy.
I knew that had been born in Serbia.
Okay, I'm trying to see if I can find anything.
Yeah, but what year is that, Mark?
Well, that's 29, but it also says that he was a Jewish engineer from Serbia. He worked for the charter for over 10 years. I don't know if that means the Palestine Potash Company was chartered in 29.
Yeah, the charter will be what was they may not be referring to that. They may be referring to the Zionist organization that got the Balfour Declaration. That was called the Charter for Palestine or something. I can't remember what they called it.
The Charter for Palestine? Is that just like a bombing zone or something?
Maybe. It depends on who's asking. If it's a timey dipshittowitz, then no.
Well, still, you guys have not told me or explained to me what Israel produces.
Other than produce anything. Steel,
yes, and that's the point. They are, like, I think economically, they're in the top 10, I think.
Well, but what they produce, they produce politicians that lobby for money. That's what they produce.
Yeah.
As much as you guys say you're atheists and all that sort of thing, you've got to realize thought's a form of energy. And that it doesn't matter if what the enemy believes is true or it's not true, they're still motivated by it. And their motivation has always been to run a world government out of Jerusalem, as it says in their Talmud. And David...
Yeah, but you don't have to be religious in order to understand that. I mean, we look at that as a scientific... It's not even a phenomenon. I mean, we realize that the Jews believe this, and as long as they believe it, they're going to act on what they believe. We realize that. It's a cause and effect relationship. So just because we're atheists doesn't mean that we don't believe that they believe something. It just means that we think it's fucking horseshit. That's all.
I found the answer to your question with the potash.
Okay.
The official report made by an Austrian journalist, Theodor Herzl, who we all know who he is.
yeah, an Austrian journalist. Yeah, another fucking year.
So this official report estimates the minerals, except with the exception of oil, in 1925 as follows. Magnesium chloride, 22,000 tons, value $600 billion. Potassium chloride, 20 tons, valued at $75 billion. This is in 1925. Other minerals valued at $1,200 billion, or a total of about $3 trillion, not including oil. This is in a book called The Palestine Mystery. The enormous value staggers the imagination. I'm unable to appraise the effect on the human race if the Zionists gain indisputed title to it, or if it should be devoted to public use. So yeah, what your friend's telling you is that there's trillions of dollars worth of minerals in the Dead Sea, in the dried up pans of the Dead Sea. So he's saying it's a money issue, which is any Jew is going to lead you along those lines, and they're going to kind of turn it away from political, as they always do.
But the thing is that Theodor Herzl would have got his information from that British Army officer's survey, because he actually surveyed it. And I also know for a fact the Dead Sea is heaps lower than it has been all through time. The water level is dropping. And it's not, you know, a foot or 2 foot, it's something like 20 feet. In some places you go to the Dead Sea, there's just mud. And people say, oh, so what? Well, they're using the water for processing something. I'm not sure what it is, but I did read about it before. And the whole thing is that I'm thinking that what they are doing is they are sitting on the land. Yeah, there's financial benefits, but everything seems to be like all of their actions seem pointed in one direction. And that is fulfillment of these prophecies that they're going to run a world government under their king out of Jerusalem, and they are doing everything they can to bring that about. And if Israel produces nothing and it's got to be financed by everyone else, then so be it. We'll get ourselves in position so we can do it. Guess what they did?
$3 trillion is a whole lot of money in 1925. If you're looking at it that way, yeah, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of value there now. And we all, the Dead Sea, that makes pretty good sense. It would be mineral rich. I look at it as it's a Jewish thing. It's got to be more political than anything, Israel.
Everything's political.
Yeah. Everything.
Hey, by the way, I got a message from Billy Bob, and he basically said that they produce Israel produces bullets and bell peppers. and the thing about this, because I kind of took them to task on it, I was like going, you know, under what name? And Israeli Military Industries, big business.
Oh.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. You know, today I was watching the History Channel, and they were discussing the X-15, the SR-71, and this and that. And then it went into, like, Northrop, what Northrop is today. And what the fuck do you see as a CEO? Some fucking kite there. I looked at him, and I was like, that's a kite. And then they said his name, and I was like, well, fuck me if that ain't the truth. I mean, we know about the report, like, about a year ago, where the guy that does the flak jackets for U.S. troops did who's a Jew, a kike Jew, very, very kikey. I mean, there's a difference between a Jew and a kike, but this fucking kike did a $10 million, I don't think you would call it a bar mitzvah for his daughter, or is it the same thing?
No, it's a bat mitzvah.
A bat mitzvah, yeah.
Yeah, bar
mitzvah for the male and bat mitzvah for the female.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I know that guy you're talking about. He's the one that got the rap stars in and all that shit.
Yeah, but what he produced, or what his company produced, was a complete failure, you know? It didn't work. And he's obviously making billions to be able to throw a $10 million back mitzvah, or whatever the hell you want to call it, for some fucking hook nose. And God, I saw the pictures of her. If she didn't have such a big ass nose, I would actually probably, like, you know, smack her in the face, but I wouldn't want to hurt my knuckles, you know?
How rude.
Well, there's you bring up a good thing, Rob. This is a good point. There is definitely something to look into if Herzl and the and His Majesty and England are talking about $3 trillion worth of minerals, excluding oil, in 1925. You got my mind reeling right now. I'm searching for more on this.
See, the thing is, one thing people got to get their head around: the Jews and the Muslims are virtually identical in one thing, and that is the religion is politics and religion dressed up as one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't separate them. And especially with the Jews, everything they do is a mixture of religion, politics, and money. Everything. And it's like a form of fucking overwhelming dogma. You know? And it's a case of they are multi-level. They'll make a move and they'll do something, and people say, oh, it's political. And someone else will say, no, it's financial. And someone else will say, it's religious. But they're all right. It's a bit of all of it.
Well, here's real quick to bring it up again. This huge concession of mineral rights was first granted by the British colonial secretary to the Russian Zionist Moishe Novoyemsky, Novomaisky, in 1923. So it was before 29. Palestine, limited granted of the Lords, it was finally granted in January 1st, 1930, by the British House of Lords to Palestine Potash Limited, a joint stock company. The company, so far as known, is composed wholly of American, British, and Russian Zionist Jews. So, yeah, it's something to think about. 1,500 American stockholders, capital $400 million. Group owns 581 shares of the parent company, blah, blah, blah. This is back in the day. So, yeah, there is definitely something to this, because that's the kind of money that you just can't even imagine back in 1925 and 1930. The protocols, blah, 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 for Europe, the British concession and the protocols. Mr. H.H. Klein says of the British concession and the protocols, the aim of Zionist leaders was to establish a Jewish state in Palestine. Why? Was it in order to fulfill the plan outlined by the protocols for world conquest, or was it to protect the concession from the exploitation of all the chemical wealth in the Dead Sea in Palestine? estimated at $5 trillion total, including oil. If it is for the purpose of world conquest, then Jews have been fatally deceived because Zionist leaders and their financiers, backers, maintain that protocols are a forgery. If it is for the purpose of extracting chemical wealth from the Dead Sea, then the Jews have been shamefully imposed upon because that purpose has never been mentioned by Zionist leaders. If the protocols are a forgery, whatever they may mean, it is the most remarkable forgery ever perpetrated because every step outlined in an amazing document over, 30,000 words is an accomplished fact, which we all know. This so-called forgery was published 50 years ago. At the time, the value of the chemicals of the Dead Sea was known to the financial backers of Theodore Herzl, who is known as the father of Zionism. So, what your friend is telling you is that the whole plan for creating the State of Israel was to lock up that wealth for Jews.
Probably to take it off of the market so nobody else could exploit it and keep the mineral prices inflated.
And get it away from, obviously get it away from the crown in England as well.
Yeah, but that's theirs.
Right.
The thing is that one of the things that is not common knowledge is, people look at the Queen of England and they go, oh, yeah. Well, in the 1600s, they had a civil war. They beheaded the king. The king that they beheaded was the hereditary monarch of England. In 1688, under contract, Parliament invited William of Orange to Britain to become king. But they made the king part of Parliament, and the actual monarch title today is Monarch in Parliament. 6 years after 1688, in 1694, they got the charter for the Bank of England. Part of the deal that went on was that Cromwell would be supported by Jewish bankers in Amsterdam, and one guy's surname was Manasseh, I can't remember the rest of his name. And the deal was, you allow the Jews back in, because in 1191, Edward II had thrown the Jews out. It's called the Edict of Jewry. You repeal that and allow us back in. Well, it couldn't be repealed, but they allowed the Jews back in anyway. And William of Orange just, happens to be from the same area that the Jew bankers were in, Amsterdam and Antwerp. And since that time, they have controlled the crown. Now, the queen there today, people say, oh, well, she's German and she's this and she's not. She's not. She's a fucking Khazar. If you want to know her real name, it's Guelph. G-U-E-L-P-H. And you look that up on the internet, you'll find that Guelph was a black nobility family out of Venice, involved in a feud with the Ghibellines, and they lost. So the Guelphs had to leave, and they ended up being in Germany, and they married into the royal family of Hanover, and that's how they got the crown.
Look, Rob, she's so attractive. I would have thought that she's straight up German ancestry. She looks like a fucking nigger, like a light skinned white trash nigger.
Well, she is. She's from Khazar blood. And, I've over on ScamFront, I've posted stuff, and they just laugh at me. So I said, fine, go and have a look at the links and come back. And one of the English moderators, who's a friend of mine, he resigned, he went and looked at the links and come back and freaked out, because I've posted them on VNN as well. There's links there to the Grand Mogul of Great Britain. He circumcised Charles, William, and Harry. Now,
with his mouth, or like
I don't know. I think that's only a certain sect of the Orthodox, but they're not going to circumcise Gentiles. And Queen Victoria herself said that they were descended from the House of David. Oh, sure you are. Yeah, fucking David down the road with a fish and chip shop, maybe. But
right, what is your username on BNN?
Lord Sidious.
Well, okay, and you've posted links to that before, because I'd like to read them. Because I've heard quite a few times that there is Jewish blood in the royal family, but I was concerned about when it started and who it started with. And we all look at Charles, Charles, and you can tell. He's not a perfect example of Aryan blood. So if he's part Jewish,
what gives it away? The ears but the big fucking nose. I don't know
which. Yeah, exactly. So.
You know, it's quite funny though. They say that Philip is of Greek blood. He may have been in Greece. He's not a Greek. But what's really funny is you get Charles, the Duke of Edinburgh, Prince Michael of Kent, and some other fuckwit, I can't remember his name, another Duke, and you line them all up, and it's like, holy shit, they got a cloning machine stuck out the back somewhere. The only difference is how much head these guys, how much hair they've got left on their head. They all look like fucking identical. And it's just like, I don't mean they look similar, they look like different aged versions of the same damn model.
Right.
But the thing is that they controlled the crown of the United Kingdom since 1688 at least. That's how they're getting concessions out of it. That's how they pass all their acts in the UK. So they can do what they please. Why do you think Britain's more fucked up than anywhere else? So, when you turn around and say, well, you know, they got this concession from the British crown, well, gee, that's no surprise. This is what I'm saying to you. Everything they have done in history revolves around getting a world government out of Jerusalem. Everything.
Right. They make the host country weak. They divert the resources. And anytime you look at a country that was originally white, and England's a perfect example, you look at all the immigrants that are being brought in. Well, how did they get brought in? Obviously, Jews.
Yeah.
They used it to weaken the country.
In the thread at Scam Front, we were having a debate on this sort of stuff. And, you know, we were talking about this, and I said, you know, all the loyalists are there saying, oh, you know, we should have a military coup and protect the Queen and all this. And I'm, what is the matter with you people? The Queen is a Khazar, and she doesn't give a fuck about the people of Britain. And now we're all carrying on, and some guy comes in and says, hang on, what about the Queen's Christmas address for 2006? She preached multiculturalism all over the place, and that's not a fucking word out of the rest of them.
Well, you've got to keep in mind that over...
Zayas has posted in the chat, she wants to know, am I saying Prince Charles is not white? And I'm saying, yes, he's a Khazar. He's a descendant of Khazars.
Right.
The only reason that they allowed him to marry Diana is because Diana was the one female in the world with more Stuart blood in her line than anyone. And the Stuarts are the hereditary monarchs of England. They are the real monarchs, not these poofters that they've stuck in by an act of parliament.
And then they killed her. But then they killed her because she was fucking some Middle Eastern guy.
No, they killed her because she was just a broodmare. They got the two heirs out of her and they got rid of her. Maybe she discovered the truth of them being Khazars. I don't know, but no, the royal family of the United Kingdom are not white. They are Khazars. And it's a case of she's got Stuart blood in her line. She's got her kids.
Hey, Rob, how do you spell that, man?
Spell what? Stuart or Khazar?
I know how to spell Stuart, you bastard. How do you spell Khazar?
K-H-A-Z-A-R.
Yes.
Can you guys say that one more time so people
are listening?
K-H-A-Z-A-R.
Yeah, Zed is Z, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot you guys don't know how to spell properly. It's a Z for you illiterate American types.
At least we don't have that shocking Australian accent, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And we know how to drive on the right side of the fucking street.
You know,
we still got our guns, too.
And we don't bang kangaroos, either.
Yeah.
Oh, we bang kangaroos, but usually with a shotgun. But there's that many of them running around in the bush, man. You've got to fucking shoot them. And then we get all the American green groups going nuts at us. It's like, fucking hell, come out and have a look how many there are, you nuggets. There's more kangaroos running around in the bush than there are people in the country.
I just found that link I was reading from about the mineral wealth and Palestine Potash Company.
Yep.
Just posted it on the forum as well as on the show chat. So everybody read it. It's definitely interesting stuff.
Okay. That Bible Believers, if you search through that site, they will actually have information on the Khazar background to the British royal family, because that's one of the links that I posted in a VNN radio thread is to this site.
Yeah, they do good work on the protocols too. The Bible Believers site is.
Let me ask you guys, Mark or Panzerfaust. I don't know what your name is.
It's Mark.
He's a Mark too.
You got two Marks. Okay. Have you guys read the book? Rob, I'm sure you've read it. It's called The 13th Tribe by Arthur Koestler.
No, yeah. I've heard of it, but I've never read it. No.
That's a book that's. I mean, it's written by a Jew. But it's interesting in that it gives the actual history of how the people who are Khazars got converted to Jews. Basically what happened was, is Khazars are people who lived in an area of, part of Asia called, basically what it is now is called Kazakhstan. Okay, but then it was called Khazaria. And what happened is...
Khazaria's not there. They were originally tribes people that moved in. They're related to the Turco-Mongol people.
Right. I was
Khazaria wasn't there. Khazaria was in the Ukraine.
Right.
The area of Kazakhstan.
But it encompassed a much bigger area than what I'm
sure.
what we're talking about. Kazakhstan now and the Ukraine now, that was all of Khazaria back then. Okay. So what we're seeing is that people who are Khazars are a mix of Mongoloid and Turkish blood, and also Eastern European blood. Now, how did that happen? Is what happened is at the time of basically you're looking at like 700, 800 BC, is they were getting pushed by Swedish Vikings and Russian Vikings, also Genghis Khan, and then from the south the Ottoman Empire. They were getting pressure from three different tribes of people. They were being invaded. And for some reason, I don't know why, but the Semites from Israel went there to convert their whole tribe over to Judaism. So they got converted to Judaism. Pardon me?
They invited the rabbis, because what they did, they invited representatives of the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians. This happened in 740 by the Grand Kagan. And the name Kaganovich is actually a reflection of someone who's a descendant of the Grand Kagan. And what they did was they asked the representatives of all three religions two questions. Why should I pick your religion? And if I didn't pick yours, who should I pick? So they all said, oh, you should pick us because of whatever bullshit. The Jews said, if you're not going to pick us, pick the Muslims. And the Muslims and Christians both said, if you're not going to pick us, pick Judaism. So the Sephardic rabbis actually converted the entire upper class of the Khazars to Judaism in 740. And they then converted the Khazarian language across to Hebrew letters. And the descendants of the Kievan Rus, which are the Swedish and Norwegian Vikings you're talking about, they managed to assault the Khazarian kingdom with 50,000 guys. They actually rode down the Volga River and assaulted the Khazarian Empire and basically just smashed them. That's how they ended up in Eastern Europe.
Right. That's when they were driven into the Ukraine, parts of Russia, Poland, and what was Czechoslovakia. And that's where your Eastern European Jew came from. Your Ashkenazi Jew, right. That's why they're called an Ashkenazi Jew. They're fascinated with the Kabbalah more so than the Sephardic Jews are. And that's where you get these Jewish rituals from, where they take the blood of the Goyim child, they spread it out on a cheesecloth, let it dry, and then they mix it with the unleavened bread and use it in their sacrifices. I don't know if you ever read the book called Jewish Ritual Murder by Arnold S. Leith, but
yeah,
it basically,
I've read it.
Yeah, it basically catalogs all these crimes in the 19th and 20th century where Jews were caught in these ritual murders of Goyim children. Okay, it's a sick ritual. These people that read the Kabbalah and they take it for as their spiritual belief are fucking wackos.
No, I mentioned before about they were kicked out of Britain. Part of the reason they were kicked out is because they were officially kicked out in 1191. But before that, what had happened was there'd been many complaints of ritual murder, and the crowning incident was a little boy, I think he was about 10, and he's known now as St. Hugh of Lincoln. And if you go to Lincoln, to the Catholic cathedral, because it's still the original cathedral standing from those days. They've covered it now. They've got something in front of it, but there's actually a plaque to St. Hugh of Lincoln, who died as a victim of ritual murder. And when they kill them, they're forbidden to bury them. They have to leave them in a sewer or human waste, bloody, I forget what they called them then, latrine sort of thing. And they found Hugh's body in a tree, and they managed to capture one of the Jews, and being weak-willed, fucking spineless trash, he basically just coughed straight away. And
right, absolutely.
He coughed and told, oh, yeah, it was these guys. They were all put to death, and the rest of them were kicked out. And that was ritual murder in 1190, I think. And, you know, they've been at it for century upon century, and, you know, through Eastern Europe, there's legends about this putting the blood in certain things, and one of the things that they're meant to put the blood in is Haman ears that they eat on Purim.
Right. If anybody wants that book, by the way, I have that. I can send it to you. Just contact me on the forum.
Oh, they still sell it online.
Well, I mean, people can quote borrow my copy for free.
Okay. One thing you guys should do is you should go over to Scamfront and actually search, because one of the guys has got a thread on Jewish ritual murder. I don't know how long the thread is, but he's got all sorts of shit in there, including links that where you can download video clips and stuff. And it's a very, very good thread. I can't think of his surname. I know his first name's Mark. I can't think of his surname, but it's a very good thread. And it's not fallacy. The reason I say that, you know, people say, oh, it's all fake. Remember I said before, everything's a form of energy? When you sacrifice a human being, you actually release a shitload of energy. And that's what it's all about. And the blood is what carries a lot of the energy as well. That's why a lot of the primitives used to say, oh, you know, you sacrifice your enemies and drink their blood, and it makes you stronger because you're absorbing their life energy. And that's what the Jews are doing it for. They may be very primitive, but they actually have, they know a lot more about a lot of that than we do.
But you got to admit, I mean, it just does prove that Jews are, underneath it all, just a superstitious mud people. Still to this day, I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff, I'm thoroughly convinced they enjoy kosher meat because they get to watch an animal suffer to death. I mean, if you've ever seen how they do it, it's I actually made a video about it. I recommend everybody go watch how a cow is slaughtered for the kosher market. It's insane. You know, these people are yeah, that ritual murder book, that Jewish ritual, that was really disturbing, actually.
Yeah, I read it, and I was just like, holy shit, if everybody read this book in the United States, these people would be kicked out within a few days, you know?
Yeah, I actually read it just recently, in March, I read it. I didn't read the whole thing, I mean, there's a lot of flipping through I did, but, you know, I read a bunch of the book, and it was really disturbing.
Well, one thing I will say about that book is that, I mean, I got a pretty strong stomach, but even as strong as my stomach is, there's a couple times I had to put the book down and I was like, that's fucked up.
Yep.
I mean, especially when the stories involve children, where they would, like, you know, basically skin the child while it was alive. The whole thing with them is if they need to get the blood, drain the blood out of the body while it's still alive, because
right.
For some reason, when there's more fear going on with the person who's being killed, if you get them to be tortured in absolute serious pain, for some reason the blood has more value, whereas if you just kill them
more
real
energy.
Fast.
More
right.
Negative energy. That's what
right.
It's all about.
Yeah, it's disgusting. I mean, the Kabbalah Jews and the people who study that stuff and... they're disgusting people. I mean, other than just ritual murder, I mean, yeah, another reason why they were kicked out is because of their banking practices. And the banking practices, what would happen is that, I mean, you have a dollar that's backed by gold, and then you take it off that standard, you're basically cheapening it, and that's why they get kicked out from one country to the next. I mean, besides the ritual murder thing, and letting all the degenerate aspects of, you know, come into the country, banking practices was probably the main reason why they got kicked out of every country that they've ever been in Europe.
Right. Jews look at money, a note of money, as a good, when in a sense money is not a good. It's a measure of goods.
Change. That's all.
Right. So when you make money from a note, you're essentially devaluing it, and you're making money from nothing because you don't have the actual property there. You just have a measure of the goods. So yeah, usury is making money from nothing.
Of course.
Basically, is what it is.
One thing that people don't add together is some of the facts to actually get a better idea of the picture. Like, for example, we know that the Jews were kicked out of Europe. And we know that they were practicing usury. And we know about the Dark Ages and the Renaissance. Right? Get all those dates and
it's
put them on the same
Renaissance, you nugget.
You can say it any way you want, you fucking candidate for a good haircut. But put the dates on the same timeline and see what happens. And they're all in the same area. And do you know why? Because the Dark Ages is where there was no learning, no arts, nothing. And why do you reckon that is? Because there was no money. No one had money to divert to anything that wasn't revolving around survival today. As soon as the Jews got kicked out and the usury stopped, money became available, bang, Renaissance comes along and you've got fucking painters and investors everywhere. That's what happens when these guys are prevented from practicing usury. We only had a dark age. No money.
Yeah, but Rob, look at how, I don't mean to say this in a positive way, but look at how brilliant they are. They were able to actually declare war on Germany in 1933 and then declare that they had 6 million Jews die during World War II, and then at the same time take control of America with regards to both the news media and politically. And now they're doing it, they've done that economically at the same time. I gotta hand it to them. I mean, these fucking types. I mean, seriously, they should all be shot. But still, at the same time, you know, they've done it the right way. I mean, they've taken control of the world. Basically,
well, Jews don't have wanderlust though. Like that's why the Renaissance happened. When white people have money, they like. For instance, if we didn't have usury in our government now, we would be exploring space. We would have scientific breakthroughs that are amazing. We would be doing things that white people just do for the sake of doing because we have wanderlust. Jews don't have wanderlust. It happens to be our downfall, too, because our wanderlust also gives us kind hearts. And Jews don't have either of that. They have neither wanderlust or kind hearts. They just have a desire to propagate their pockets and juice.
Funny,
yeah.
their whole thing
an audio file a while back about altruism, discussing that exact topic, and she said that altruism is good amongst a small group of people where we've all got the same needs and the same motivations and we're all linked, but altruism doesn't work in our favor, and that's how they exploit us.
Right,
that's true.
Well, their whole goal in life is, other than to rule the world by way of communism, but it's also to consume. And the more they consume, the more they need, the more they, you know, it's like an upside-down pyramid. So consuming, entertaining themselves, and not working in the process. That's the whole thing with the Jew.
Yeah. And they're not efficient as a people, really.
No, they need a host. If they destroy the host, they destroy themselves.
Yeah.
So that's why, the thing is, the whole thing with the Jew is that's why they want to communize the world. They want two races of people. People who are not Jews and people who are Jews. So if they get people who are not Jews, what's the thing? What is the thing that's gonna? What are they gonna do? They're all gonna be making $400 a week. They're all gonna be working for the same company, Walmart. They're all gonna be, you know, arguing about the same fake news. And if there's not any white people there, then there's no such thing as anti-Semitism, because nobody's smart enough to question what the Jews are doing. I'm telling you try to talk to a non-white person about the same things we're talking about, It's not possible. They don't have the wherewithal to understand these things. And there's only
some
a few
do,
of them.
Not all.
Some of them do, but I mean, we're talking about like, you know, an infinitesimal small percentage of non-whites that understand this stuff. But even the smart ones that I've talked to who I thought they were smart, as soon as you start talking to them about this, they're like, they look at it as like an emotional issue as opposed to a strategic or a logical issue.
It's common sense, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like you try to tell them about this stuff, and it's like, so you don't like Jewish people, huh? And it's like all the stuff you try to just tell them, it's like it just went right over their head.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, these people that come on and say we should work with the Muslims, we should work with the blacks, fuck that shit. These people don't understand what we're talking about. That's why the Jews want to breed the white man out of existence, because if there's nothing left but a bunch of, you know, mixed race people, you know, you got between black, Puerto Rican, Mexican, who knows what the fuck these people are, but, you know, they're not going to question what the Jews are doing, because the Jews are always going to give them fake political issues to argue about. They're always going to give them superheroes to worship. They're always going to give them, you know, whatever to entertain themselves. Because non-white people, they're only interested in being entertained, but they're not smart enough, like the Jew is, to take control of the planet and make everybody else work for them so that they don't have to work. If the Jews can control Israel from Israel, or control the world from Israel, and not have to work and make all have a world tax being sent to Israel, basically, it's a world communist pig pen. It's a heaven for Jewish people, because they got the rest of the world working for them. They don't have to do shit.
I found the thread on Stormfront about ritual murder, and it's in the chat. So if someone wants to post it on the forum, be good.
I'll post it.
But the thing is that what you're saying is correct, but communism's a vehicle. It's not the be-all and end-all. And it's merely used, it's sort of like a political expression of their spiritual religion.
Right, communism.
But the thing is, you've got to understand is that their Talmud tells them certain things. Their Talmud says that when their Messiah comes, the entire world will be delivered into the hands of the Jews, the wealth of all of the kings of the planet will be given over to them, and that every Jew will have 2,500 slaves. That's a few of the things it says.
Well, that's where we're at now, though.
They've done it.
Yeah, they have. They're already here. Then
because
their
everybody,
king is here.
Everybody talking on the show tonight and everybody listening, we're all slaves of the Jews.
Huh?
Well, I think, well, let's clarify that, Rob. A lot of us are slaves through fucking debt.
All of us are slaves through debt.
Yeah, that's basically what they've done. Is
yeah, of course.
Through debt, we are all fucking slaves.
Yep.
You know, there's no other way to discuss it. I mean, and it's like when you got Silverstein, who paid, I think, we did the math the other day on it.
$7 billion. $7 billion. Are you talking about the insurance policy you took out?
Oh yeah, but it's specifically the conversation I have with somebody. Dealt specifically with Tower 7 was that he was into it for $364 million, okay? And then the tower collapsed, and now he rebuilt it, I guess. He basically bought a new building because it didn't work out perfectly well, $200 million. He's got a new building for $200 million, that's basically an $800 million building. So you do the math. I mean, what does it cost to in that area to lease a square foot? You know, $5, and there's hundreds of thousands of square feet. Yeah, he's making money like crazy. I mean, that is fucking
insane. Really $5 a square foot up there in New York for those buildings?
It's got to be more than that. I would think it would be more than that.
Yeah, because, I mean, here in Orlando, it's about $1 a square foot. I know it's much more in New York, but I didn't know it was that much more.
Oh, dude, I live in L.A., man, and it's, like, about $4 a square foot. So.
Fuck that. That's fucking crazy, man. That's, like, you know, for a decent-sized office, like, $12,000 a month, you know?
Well, yeah, and that's the point, you know?
Yeah, that's the point, yeah. It's worth, that's a lot of money.
I would think that the key is to find out, you know, did he already have agreements with the FBI and the CIA to have them come back into the building? Because that's what Building 7 was. I mean, all the fucking goddamn, pardon my French, but all the damn stuff that was being done against the Security Commissions Act, that all the cases against them was in that building, and they blew it up. So all of this, you know,
all the Enron data was in the building as well.
Yeah, exactly. This
is another example of what I said to you before, Mark. Everything's multi-leveled. There was all that stuff, and there was a shitload of gold in the basement. The building
the gold was under 1 and 2.
Yeah, but also that the main towers were suffering from concrete cancer as well. And so there was half a dozen reasons that building had to come down. Everything they do never has one reason. It's always got many reasons.
Yeah.
And that's what kills people, because they come along and they say, oh, it's a fucking conspiracy theory. He said it was this. You're saying it's that. He says it's this. He says it's that. You're all fucking nuggets. Well, it's actually all of the above.
Right.
Hey, well, but hold on a second, though, Rob. I mean, it's not just a matter of that. It all relates back to the Jew and the money. Building
so what relates to them?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if you look at it, was going to cost $20 billion just to get the asbestos out of the buildings. But
there you go.
Yeah, but yet the lease agreement's worth about $7 billion. Well, that's a naked fucking proposition, you know. Blow up the buildings.
Yep.
I mean, it's all mathematical. I mean, it's almost ridiculously stupid, you know.
But yeah, at the same time, you can actually go out and brainwash everyone on terrorism and say, oh, look, we need these laws because of. Have you ever heard the Latin term auto ab chao?
No.
It means order from chaos, and it's the motto of the people who are behind the people running your new world order. It's also on your on certain buildings and fucking documents around the place. And I always knew that what they would do was they'd have some form of emergency that was so bad that they would turn around and say, oh shit, you're gonna have to give us world government because we can't handle this emergency without a centralized government. And I always thought it would be the things that have been showing us on TV, like, you know, oh, there's an asteroid coming and we have to shoot it down, or aliens are going to land, or it's AIDS. I never figured that they'd invent terrorism. The one thing I never figured, and they did it. And that's also a byproduct of this scam, you see. So they've actually pulled a big scam that had financial, political, and all different levels of benefit for them. Cunning. Not smart, but cunning.
Hey, Rob, I want to ask you and Todd a question here. Being that I'm a Catholic, and I know how, I guess, the Catholics, they pretty much are the biggest landholders on the planet. How do you guys see them playing into what's going on now? Because I see the Catholics here locally, here in L.A., you know, the Cardinal Mahoney, he's pushing illegal immigration, because that's donation money and all that kind of shit. I mean, what do you guys think about that? I mean, with regards to everything from 9/11 to now, how do the Catholics play into that bullshit? Todd, Rob,
Well, what did you say about
figure out what the question means?
I mean, what you're saying that the Catholics own a lot of land? Is that what you said?
Oh, they're the biggest landowners on the planet.
They are?
They are.
Okay.
Yeah, hey, in 1213, King John of England in 1213 signed a treaty and ceded all of England to the Pope. And, you know, most of Europe has been given to the Pope. And, you know, when I was in sales, I rolled up to the Anglican Church, which I think is Episcopalian in the United States, And then what was happening was I was looking at getting all their phone accounts and converting them from one provider to another. And you should see all of the properties the Anglican Church has around Australia under rent. It's not houses, office buildings. And the Catholic Church is way bigger than them, way bigger.
Okay, well, the question is, how do they fit in to the basically, Mark, are you saying how do the Jews let them get away with that?
Well, the way I see it, they're part of the plan.
Right, that's what I'm figuring. But it does seem a little odd that the Jews allow the Catholic Church to get away with what they do as far as how much money they have, if they, you know, whatever kind of ownership they have in land. It just seems, I don't know. I guess I can see Mark's point. They're trying to figure out.
Are they allowed to get away with it, or are they controlling them as well?
You got to figure they're controlling their finances, right? I mean,
no, they're controlling the church. They always did. Because if you go back in history, the Catholic Church was born at the Council of Nicaea when Constantine decided that Christianity would be the state religion, and they invented the Catholic Church right there at Pent. And you know, if you look into the theology of it, what Jesus was talking about with his disciples and what Paul, who was Saul, a Jewish tax collector hunting Christians down, said afterwards is totally fucking different. And Jesus didn't have 12 disciples. That was his actual inner core. He had an outer core of something like 80 or 90 or something like that. Now, Paul never met Jesus. Ever. Jesus had disappeared before Paul was even on the scene.
Right.
However, Paul did meet some of the disciples in Damascus. Do you know what they did when they met Paul? They attempted to stone him to death. Because they said he was a blasphemer and he never knew the master. And they attempted to kill him. And then that is the version of Christianity that's gone on from there. Not Jesus' version. Paul's version's gone. And so it's a case of, I would say that the Catholic Church has always been controlled. No, it's no different than Islam. I had a debate with one of my friends who's a Muslim. And I said to him, look, Islam is distorted. And he disagreed with me. And I said, straight away, the Prophet said, don't write down anything I say or do. And he ordered them to burn all of the stuff he caught them doing. Guess what they did as soon as he died?
Yeah.
Wrote down the Quran. And do you
yeah.
know who wrote it down? Jewish converts.
Oh, boy.
And what was Paul? Paul was a Jewish convert.
Oh, they're Rob, their hypocrisy has no bounds. It's just amazing to me. Yeah, whatever it is. Fucking kaispa.
That's it. But the thing is, I would say that they have always controlled the Catholic Church. Now, that's not a reflection on Catholics, but it is on the actual edifice that they've been following. So
well,
it's a case of, it's not so much as they are allowed to do that, because they're part of the deal, from what I can see.
Yeah, but you know what, though, Rob, that's interesting, because I was raised as a Catholic. I was brought up in private schools, everything was private school. And what I see from Catholics, it's the epitome of say as we do, but it's what were the easiest girls I ever had sex
yeah.
with?
Saying is do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
That's what you mean, isn't it?
Do as I say, not as I do, exactly.
Yeah, that's what he meant. Anyway, go on with your story. Sorry to interrupt you.
I was saying, I mean, if you look at, especially here in, on the West Coast, some of the biggest pedophiles are the Catholic fucking priests. And what did the Catholic Church do? Is they hid them, and they spent money hiding them. And it's almost disgusting. You know, I won't go to a Catholic church now because of it. You know, and every time I turn on the TV here, when the Beaners and the Muds are having rallies, there here comes Cardinal Mahoney. You know, he's like, he might as well just call himself Jewy Mahoney or whatever.
Well, here's a good question for you. why do all the clergy wear yarmulkes?
That is, I've always wondered that myself, actually. I mean, I've always said, isn't that kind of Jewy?
Fuck, you know? It is Jewy. And the Pope, old John Paul II, the Polish Pope that was actually a Jew boy, he was photographed with upside down crosses on stuff.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
Yeah, there's another picture of that.
The shepherd's crook that he carried had a distorted figure of Jesus as if he was being taught and in pain. And it's a case of, you know, it's not the traditional Catholic crook. I don't know where the other one went, but the one that he had wasn't the actual proper one.
Well, I mean, if you look at him just in general, he was on a mission to promote capitalism and the Jewish system to the world. You know, he went from country to country trying to convince them that they need McDonald's and Sony. And, you know, he was very effective. In a lot of the ways, he was very effective. And,
what else did they do under his reign? They opened up a credit card.
I've heard, and correct me if I'm wrong now, the Pope Benedict now, isn't he a converted Jew?
Not sure. I think you're thinking of the other guy that was running.
You're talking about the current guy? His name's Ratzinger.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Bishop of Paris, I think.
I'm thinking of Ratzinger. That's exactly what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the current Pope Benedict, you know, whatever they call him, Pope Benedict now. But Ratzinger. From what I understand, it's not common knowledge and nobody talks about it. But if I understand correctly, he is actually a converted Jew. Like in the young years of his life, he was Jewish and was converted, and it was a problem. And Pope John Paul picked him for that reason.
But I know one of the others in the running was.
Oh, it was the other guy?
I think you're confused with the other guy because the current Pope was in the Hitler Youth.
No. He's a Polak. The current guy is a Polak.
No, he's German.
Oh, he's German.
Pope John Paul was a Polak.
Oh, well, he was born in Poland, but...
Right.
But this guy here was in the Hitler Youth as a kid because he's apologized to the Jews for it. He reckoned it wasn't by his choice, and he was also conscripted into the here, and he ran away. Fucking cowardly piece of trash. Pity that chain dogs didn't catch him and give him what he deserved, but that's another story.
Yeah, but how fucked up is that? If you're a true Catholic and you understand and you're from Europe, how cowardly is that to not say, you know what, 6 million Jews didn't die in Europe, but he apologized to them. Fuck that guy.
Political correctness is a bitch.
Do you think that if he had one atom of 6 million Jews didn't die, do you think he'd even be allowed anywhere near the Vatican, let alone be elected to the head?
You guys are missing the point, though. The whole point of the Catholic Church... It's a business. They make money. If Ratzinger came out and said, the Holocaust is bullshit, and I have no regret of being in the Hitler Youth, no one would give the Catholic Church any more money. So he comes out, and he just says, oh, it was a horrible thing, yes, and all the Jews dying in the Holocaust is horrible. Why? Because everybody really does believe that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. So he comes out and he makes amends for it, then people dig deeper in their pockets and give it to the Catholic Church.
Exactly.
But financially, though, the Catholic Church still owns like 40 to 50% of the fucking planet.
Yeah, but I guarantee a lot of that's mortgaged out to Jews at this point. You got to figure in this modern world, and I'm sure all their accountants are probably Jews. It's a Jewish world when it comes to money right now. Are you guys going to be terribly upset if I duck out right now? So I got to get some sleep. I got to work in the morning.
If you want to duck off, duck off.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be doing the same, guys. I mean, I think it was great that we got together and did this. Are we still broadcasting?
Yes,
we certainly are.
Shit.
And
yeah, I'm really not even tired, to be honest, and I'm enjoying this. I just know that I have to try and sleep.
Do
yeah,
we have people still listening to us? I mean, is there a way to find that out or what?
We have almost 50 people listening, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I haven't checked it for a minute or so, but I can tell you right now, we have 41 listeners.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I know that I can talk, and Rob will fucking talk my ear off till like 3 o'clock in the morning like he did last Tuesday.
Hey, just remind everybody about that, Mark, because they might have forgotten you, fucking nugget.
That's true.
Well, you guys are on a different time zone, so it's not quite as late for you right now. It should be around 11, I assume.
Still where clocking are you? Up. Good for me.
I'm on the East Coast. I'm in Jersey.
Yeah, I'm in Orlando, Florida, so it's 2 a.m.
Right.
Ow. Ow.
Happy trails to you.
Yes, another Free Talk Live Tuesday Coast to Coast is coming to a close.
Happy trails.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. Our extremely loyal 41 listeners that we have at the moment.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You guys are the ultimate Free Talk Live Coast to Coast fans. Thank you to Todd and Rob as well. You guys, some of the best conversation I've ever heard on Free Talk Live. And everybody tune in next Tuesday.
All right.
Okay.
See ya.
Hasta luego, Tavares.